الحمد لله، الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه وأمته وبارك وسلم. There's a story of a hippopotamus that gave birth some years ago at a world famous zoo, and the arrival of the young hippopotamus was celebrated for quite a number of weeks thereafter. Anyone knows that at any zoo, it's always a joyous occasion at the birth of a panda or kangaroo or an elephant or any other exotic animal. And you're assured that each and every arrival has enriched the world. And this is generally the euphoria and the positive sentiment expressed when these wonderful creatures are born into this world. Now, take this and contrast it with the birth of a child in, let's say, Pakistan or Egypt. And you'll find an unbelievable assortment of experts immediately would tell you that it's a moment of great sorrow, that the world somehow is impoverished by the birth of each and every child. Now, it's a strange world that we live in which the arrival of a hippopotamus is a blessing, but that of a human child is perceived as a burden. But it's even stranger that the argument given is economic. A hippo, for example, needs almost 50 kilograms of food every day. Now you compare that with a few kilograms for a human being, if even that. Further, the hippopotamus doesn't produce any of the food that it consumes. In fact, no animal does. Only human beings produce their own food. Take lions, for example. Lions eat goats, and so do human beings. But lions don't breed goats. Human beings breed goats. Take, for example, hawks. They eat chickens, just as human beings do. But hawks don't breed chickens. Human beings breed chickens. So if there were any economic argument against overpopulation, you would think that it would apply to all animals except human beings. Yet, an extremely powerful propaganda machinery has been busy for more than a century in spreading this nonsense that the world faces a human overpopulation problem. Now, at the micro level, the idea had been there in many ancient Jahiliya societies. In pre-Islamic societies, you would find people even kill their children so they won't have to feed them. But its introduction at the macro level is quite recent. It was, in fact, Reverend Thomas Robert Malthus, who lived in the 19th century, the late 18th and 19th century. He died, in fact, in 1834. He was the person who forcefully presented the idea that the human population would always exceed our ability to produce food by some natural law, he suggested. He theorized that population grows in a geometric progression, in other words, 2, 4, 6. While he said that food production grows in an arithmetic progression, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So even if there is plenty of food for everyone at the beginning, he suggested in 2 generations, there will be more people than the means to feed them, and hence the population problem as we know today. Malthus actually based his theory on very limited observations in the American colonies and even more limiting assumptions about the progress of agriculture technology. What is perceived as a population problem really is not. It's really a problem of perspective. The result of his limited observation is a theory that is totally contradicted by facts. If you look at world population, it's not been growing as fast as his theory suggests. African populations are smaller today than it was before the European slave trade played havoc with it, for example. The increase in food production, on the other hand, has been much greater than Malthus allowed. World population has more than doubled since 1950, but food supplies have more than tripled. Further, experts believe that if technology continues to improve at today's rate, it will be possible to feed 10 billion people on roughly the same amount of land currently devoted to agriculture today. As a result of improving crop yields, you find the area that is used to grow crops, about 3 billion acres globally, more or less, has increased little in the last 2 decades. Other estimates suggest that the world can support 33 billion people. And this is closer to scientific fact as compared to the alarmist theories that are bandied about in an attempt to justify, the population problem, in inverted commas. Now, While as a work of science, Malthus's theory was worthless, it was received enthusiastically, in fact, for political reasons. If you take the Industrial Revolution and capitalism that accompanied it, Industrial Revolution really didn't deliver what it promised. It was expected that as it became easier and cheaper to produce goods, everyone would share in the resulting prosperity. The rising tide would lift all boats, proverbially. But it didn't. What we find is capitalism. Capitalism produced a small class of very rich people and a large mass at barely subsisting levels. And this had nothing to do necessarily with technology, but it had everything to do with the economic system. And this is still true today. And this made people to start questioning the system. Now, Karl Marx was one extreme and misguided reaction to the very real injustices. Other critics differed in their prescriptions, but they agreed that the issue was political and social justice. Malthus wrote an essay called Essay on the Principles of Population. This was in the 18th century, late 18th century. It, in fact, was what most people don't realize, a reply to William Godwin's inquiry concerning political justice, which was produced almost 5 years before his essay in 1793. Now, William Godwin asserted the principle of human equality, and its purpose was to justify, at least to challenge the injustices that were prevalent in society. You find Malthus's work actually was a response that was attempting to justify the existing inequalities by shifting the responsibility for those social inequalities and economic inequalities from human institutions to the laws of the creator. Now, as Galbraith would say, his work provided a satisfactory formula for the rich to suffer the misfortunes of the poor. Malthus was a priest in the service of the East India Company, and he taught generations of its staffers, who would then go out and plunder the colonies with the satisfaction that the plight of their victims was actually the result of natural laws. So Malthus was actually trying to deflect responsibility for the colonial catastrophe really to nature. If you look at World War II, after World War II, when European powers found it difficult to maintain direct control of their colonies, they were concerned that the newly liberated colonies would develop and become economically independent and politically powerful if they were left to their own growth. The current population control mafia is born of these concerns, actually. Now, while Malthus's original theory remains discredited, the neo-Malthusians have tried to resuscitate it with concerns for the environment. This is their mantra. Now, add to it the UN charlatans, who are never short of fanciful phrases like reproductive rights and the like, and you get the population control bomb that has been devastating the world. To a large degree, it's actually a myth. It's a myth created to perpetuate injustices and inequalities. It didn't have to be like this. If you look at Islam, the clear Quranic teachings destroy this basic assumption of the population control campaign. Allah says, وَالْأَرْضَ مَدَدْنَاهَا وَأَلْقَيْنَا فِيهَا رَوَاسِيَ وَأَنْبَتْنَا فِيهَا مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ مَوْزُونٍ وَجَعَلْنَا لَكُمْ فِيهَا مَعَايِشَ وَمَنْ لَسْتُمْ لَهُ بِرَازِقِينَ. Allah declares, and the earth we have spread out like a carpet, set therein mountains firm and immovable, and produce therein all kinds of things in due balance. And we have provided therein means of subsistence for you and for those for whose sustenance you are not responsible. There's another verse in the Quran where Allah declares, وَإِن مِّن شَيْءٍ إِلَّا عِندَنَا خَزَائِنُهُ وَمَا نُنَزِّلُهُ إِلَّا بِقَدْرٍ مَعْلُومٍ. And there's not a thing but its sources and its treasures inexhaustible are with us, but we only send down thereof in due and ascertainable measures. There's another verse of the Quran that emphasizes this, where Allah declares, وَمَا مِن دَابَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا عَلَى اللَّهِ رِزْقُهَا وَيَعْلَمُ مُسْتَقَرَّهَا وَمُسْتَوْدَعَهَا كُلٌّ فِي كِتَابٍ مُبِينٍ. That there is no moving creature on earth, but its sustenance depends on Allah. Allah knows the time and the place of its definite abode and its temporary deposit. All is in a clear record. Now, these verses clearly demolish any basis for the use of birth control as a tool of economic policy. How can anyone who believes in the one creator, in the master and the nourisher of the universe, entertain the idea for a moment of limiting the number of children for fear of want? Our job is to use the resources wisely and distribute them justly. And Allah will provide for all human beings as He has promised and as only He can provide. What we find really is that the injustices, the inequality, the deprivation, the poverty is not because there's a lack of resources. It is actually because of the fabricated system of inequality and injustice that siphons wealth and resources away from the majority of the world, which we now, unjustifiably, in fact, call the third world, to the rich colonialists. This is, in fact, the problem. Muslims are bound by their faith to work to dismantle this obscene birth control establishment in their lands and to devote their energies to solving the problems actually caused by capitalism and caused by imperialism, caused by neocolonialism. This is actually where the problem starts. It has nothing to do with a lack of resources. It has nothing to do with overpopulation. It has everything to do with capitalism. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.